So I think it would be a good thing for us to spend a few minutes just backing up for a moment. I want to go back to the first reading. And we need to wonder and maybe just think for a moment or two why we go to the first book of Kings, to the story of Elijah, while in the gospel we're talking about Jesus and the Bread of Life discourse. So it's a good thing for us to put the story of Elijah in a little bit of context. So we need to know what's going on and why he's praying for death right now. It seems kind of random or out of the blue. Well, keep in mind the people that Elijah lives amongst while he's prophet. To be a prophet of the Lord in many ways was quite an unfortunate experience. The prophets, for the most part, had to live amongst a people of God who just frankly had a hard time worshiping God and not the other local deities of the area. And Elijah's time is no different. He is sent amongst a people who are waffling between the God of Israel and the God of the region of their neighbors, the God of Baal, B-A-A-L, Baal. And Elijah comes to the people of Israel and he says, you can't waffle. You just can't. You got to make a choice. Is God God or is he not? You're going to worship the God of Israel or you're going to worship the God of your neighbors. And he puts a challenge to them. And he says, this is what we're going to do to hash it out right now, because I'm not going to have any more of it. We're going to go and we're going to get the 450 priests of the God of Baal, and we're going to bring them into our midst in front of everybody. And each of us is going to take a young bull, and we're going to sacrifice it to our God. And we're going to tell our respective gods to come down and to consume the young holocaust, the young bull, the sacrifice. And whichever God answers our prayers with the fire, that's who we know God truly is. And everybody agrees. Everyone says, fine. Now, Elijah knows that this is a very risky move, because not only do the people of God, the whole Israelite community, the whole Jewish people, not only are they struggling to remain faithful, the king and the queen themselves are also a little bit pagan these days. King Ahab and his wife Jezebel are not exactly the most faithful of Jews either. And so the contest comes about, and the 450 priests of Baal take their young bull, and they cut it into pieces, and they put it on the altar that they have made, and they put the fuel there, but they don't light it on fire, and they just call and they pray out to the God of Baal all day, from morning through midday into the evening, saying, answer us, consume the sacrifice, and nothing happens. And Elijah taunts them, and eventually, at the end of the day, he says, duh, of course nothing's going to happen. Nobody's listening to you. So he tells the whole Israelite community, why don't you come over here to the altar of Israel, to the altar of God that I will repair. And so he rebuilds the altar of the Lord, and he places his young bull on his altar, and he takes around that altar, puts the fuel for the fire, and he digs this massive trench, and he drenches the whole thing in buckets and buckets and buckets, hundreds of gallons of water. And in the midst of the whole Israelite people, he cries out to God, and he said, God, you see the 450 priests of the pagan God, verse 1, I am the last prophet of the Lord, but you are the God of the universe. And you hear my prayer, and I ask you to make yourself known to this whole people that there is only one God. And so consume this sacrifice in the midst of your people. And in that moment, fire rains down from the sky, and fire comes upon the holocaust and burns up the holocaust and all the water and all the fuel, and everything disappears in the flames. Everything burns up. And the whole people of Israel witness this, and they say, "Is the God of Israel is God indeed. The God of Israel is God indeed." And Elijah says, you're darn right he is. Bring me those priests. And then he does this very spectacular, very grotesque thing. I don't know how he did it, but he did. He took all 450 priests of Baal, and he killed them on the spot. Scriptures say he slit their throats. Yeah, ugly. Yeah, it's gross. I would not be able to do that. I don't know how he did it, but he did. Bunch of dead pagan priests laying on the ground. And Elijah, in the midst of his people, who just got shown a thing or two. Okay, well, how do you think King Ahab and Queen Jezebel felt about that little escapade? Not so very hot. So Jezebel sends word to Elijah, and she says, I am going to do to you exactly what you did to those priests. And so Elijah does the only sensible thing that anybody can do when they receive that kind of threat. He leaves town. He skips. He says, I'm out. He runs for his life. He runs away. That's what he does. So we pick up the story in the first reading, and what we hear in the reading is this moment where Elijah is running for his dear life, and he gets about one day into the desert, and that's as far as he gets. And so just imagine this now, why it makes sense that Elijah would be saying, that's enough. The scriptures say he prays for death from the Lord. Just imagine what that prayer was like for Elijah. He says, I am the only one left. Your people are stiff-necked. They don't believe. They're probably still not converted. I just killed 450 people, and the king and queen are after me for my life. You might as well take me because it's coming one way or the other. And then presumably he falls asleep, perhaps in great sadness and in some very real discouragement as to the predicament of his life in this moment. So here he is, literally at his wit's end, pretty convinced that he's about to die. And in that moment, God sends the angel of the Lord to him to do something funny. He gives him food and water. Elijah prays for protection. No, in fact, he goes beyond that. He prays for death at God's hands. Make it merciful, Lord. God says, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you a hearth cake and some water. Interesting choice, Lord. Not what I would have expected. So the angel gives Elijah food and drink, and he says, take and eat this, because if you don't take and eat this, you're not going to have the strength that you need. And he reminds Elijah of this twice. So Elijah takes the food, he takes the drink, and then he himself walks a miracle, which is 40 days and 40 nights without food or drink to the mountain of Horeb. And when he gets to the mountain, that's the moment where he hides away in the crack of the mountain, and God says to Elijah, Elijah, what are you doing here? And Elijah says, you know exactly what I'm doing here. I'm running for my life, because I'm supposed to die at the hands of the king and at the command of the queen. And in that moment, God consoles Elijah by revealing himself to him and by encouraging him and by saying to Elijah, be it known to you, my servant, I am sovereign. And nothing escapes my providence. And you will not die at anyone's hands if I don't allow it. You see, but notice what's going on in this moment of that story. You see, Elijah has a great task ahead of him, and he has some very important grace that he's going to receive. And he makes it about one day into a 40-day journey on his own resources. And after a day, he quits. He's like, I can't do it. I don't got it. He probably doesn't even know in that moment that he's got another 40 days to go. But what he does know is that he has nothing left in the tank. And that if God doesn't save him now, it's the end. But God gives him strength not just for a day. God gives him strength for 40. You know, the very theological number 40, the number of testing in scriptures. Will Elijah persevere, even in the midst of his very difficult situation? So that story is a story that we see paired together as we continue the Bread of Life discourse, when Jesus is continuing his conversation with the Jewish people who at this point are murmuring against him, and they're saying, what the heck is this guy talking about? It's a bunch of shenanigans. As far as I'm concerned, this guy's talking about coming from heaven and being bread. That doesn't make any sense. I mean, if I said that to you, you would call me crazy. And Jesus says, may I remind you that even in the prophets, it says they shall all be taught by God. Jesus is revealing this to be a teaching moment. And what does God know about us when God has to teach us? God has lots of experience with humans. God knows that when he teaches humans, he teaches human beings that are very, very, very slow learners. That's all of us. It was the story of the people, the Hebrew people, who became the Israelite people, who became the nation of the Jews, and it took them thousands of years to decide whether or not they were going to follow the Lord. And they struggled generation after generation after generation. You can imagine the exasperation of God. And Jesus says, I shall teach you. And how does God teach people who are slow to learn? Well, in the most frustrating way possible, which is just to continue to give them more and more opportunities at the same thing until they get it right. He just keeps giving us a new opportunity and a new opportunity. And all we really want from God is either that he fix it or that he change us so that we don't have to have the difficulty anymore. And God says, that's not how it works. Here's another try. No, that's not how it works still. Here's another try. I'm a slow learner. I'm a slow learner. You remember last week that I was talking to you that one of the things God wanted to give me last week was patience. Now, guess how quickly I learned? I didn't learn. So God gave me more patience this week. You see, I've been, in the last probably 3-4 weeks, well, the last several months, most of the summer, but specifically the last 3-4 weeks, been very, very anxious and just concerned about small things that I really don't have any control over. You know, I'm in this time of transition, and tomorrow is my first official day as chaplain at Lumen Christi. And so the first thing that we're going to do tomorrow is we get together as faculty and staff. We're going on retreat. We're all going to take a retreat. And it's my job to direct this retreat. And I've been trying my darndest for the last several weeks to prepare for this retreat. And I've been trying to clear everything possible out of my schedule so that I can focus on what I think is the most important thing. And the Lord's like, nope. No, that's still not important. No, that's still not important. You don't get it yet. And so the Lord continues to interject into my schedule things that I didn't plan for, but that are more important than what I'm trying to do for my own sense of peace and command. And when the Lord offers us that kind of grace, it's really important that we take that grace, even if we're not enthused about it, at least initially. Because he really, when he teaches us, he is trying to tell us, I really do know better, just to remind you. I do know better. Are you ready to trust me? Nope, not yet. Okay. Are you ready to trust me? Nope, not yet. Okay. Are you ready to trust me? And he's going to ask just as many times as it takes. I had a really important thing this week that the Lord asked me to enter into, which of course you don't plan for, you can't expect. There was a call from the chaplain at the hospital, and I got to spend some important time this week up in the labor and delivery ward with a mother and a father who delivered a stillborn baby at 20 weeks. That's a hard thing to walk into. Much more important to do that than to worry about all these piddly things like, are they going to like me, and am I going to say the right thing on a retreat? I mean, that stuff is just small. And in my life, it's huge, but it's stupid. And God says, no, let me feed you with what's most important. And someday, maybe I'll come around. Maybe I'll learn it. I'm probably not there yet. But thanks be to God that when he teaches us, he does not tire out as quickly as we tire out. You see, God knows very well that we have to walk a journey that ain't no way we're even going to get close to finishing. Just like Elijah, the man lasted one day out of 40 on his own. And the Lord needed to give him a lot more. And that's true for Elijah. That's true for me. That's true for every one of us. So God feeds us in a way that really multiplies what we're capable of. And that's, I mean, isn't that why we're here? We come here every Sunday. And God teaches us every Sunday. And how does God teach us when we come here every Sunday? He pretty much just says the same thing over and over and over. We hear the same prayers every week. Because that's the beauty of the way that God teaches. He renews the opportunity in us so that we get it just a little bit more. Or maybe that we recommit. Or maybe that we re-believe. He asks us each day to make a decision to trust him, that he knows the journey better than we know the journey. And if we trust him, we will complete something far beyond what is within our own capacities.